Man? Hello?
2 Timothy 4 to 6. 4, excuse me, 2 Timothy chapter 4, 6 through 8. And the title of my sermon this morning is it's a marathon and not a sprint. How many of you are, do we have any runners in here? How many of you are runners? You know, just like to run. Okay, just one. Two. Okay. Yeah, I know, like, Sam is a runner. Who else is a runner? Eric? Eric's not here. Is Eric here? Eric's not here. Eric's a runner, too. A few months ago, I signed up for a half marathon in Oakland Township. And last year, thanks. Hey, thank you. Last year, Young and I ran a 10K, and after I finished the 10K, I was like, hey, that's not too bad. I think I can go for the half marathon. And anyone know what a marathon is? 26.2, right? 26.2. The guy died right at the end of the marathon. Like, the guy who originally ran it, didn't he die at the end? Like, he was running a message, you know? That was, like, the start of the marathon. This guy was running a message. And he gave the message, and then he collapsed and died after, you know, after running 26.2 miles. I don't know what his time was, but I mean, it's, like, crazy. And so, I signed up for this half marathon thinking that it would be, you know, that it would kind of be good to have a goal, you know? Some of you guys, like, set a goal so that you can, you know, if you have a goal there, you're forced to run, and it's not working for me. Like, I thought that if I signed up half marathon that I'd start running more, but I'm not. And so I was at the gym with Sarah, and on the treadmill. And the treadmill stinks for running, isn't it? Like, it's really, like, boring, and, you know, we've got the TVs in front of us or whatever, but we're talking, and I'm like, I told Sarah, I'm like, I'm dying here, you know, and this, I'm only running like I've only run like 30 minutes or so, so I'm only doing like 3 miles, and I gotta get up to like 10, they say if you're up to 9 or 10, then you can probably run like a half marathon, so that's my goal, is to get to 9 or so, is my long run, you know, and so I need somebody to help me here, Sarah, you know, I'm just dying, I'm not gonna make it, and Sarah kind of said, well, I think I could run with you, maybe. I could train with you, maybe, or something like that. But I talked with a number of people who've done marathons, and I knew a guy back in Trinity when I was living in Chicago, and he did the Chicago Marathon, and he said it was kind of interesting. The opening scene of a marathon, like when everyone's kind of warming up, you know, and they've got the line there, is like there's people that are, like, really serious. There's people that are, like, just goofballs. He said there's people that, like, he said, I was in the Chicago Marathon, and he said there's a guy with, like, a Superman cape on, you know, and, like, a Superman outfit on. And then there was a couple of guys wearing, like, army fatigues and, like, combat boots. And then there was, like, a guy with, you know, those, have you ever seen those Hulk, the Incredible Hulk fists that you can, like, in toy stores? Like, it's big, huge fists that you can pound, and they're, like, you pound them, and they're, like, I will destroy, you know, like, there's this guy, like, with this big fist, like, dressed like the Incredible Hulk. There's just a bunch of goofballs running, you know, getting ready to do the marathon. But he said that there is a difference between, like, those who are their first time doing the marathon and then those who have run marathons before, you know, who've seen it and who've done it maybe once or twice or many times before. He said, like, you know, kind of the first-time runners, you can tell the first-time runners because they're really kind of chatty and they're a little bit excited and a little bit nervous, you know, because they know they've got to run 26.2 miles. And so they're really kind of just talking to each other and just kind of, you know, a little bit anxious. And then he said there is more of the seasoned runners, you know. And he said you can tell, like, the seasoned runners because he said they are a little bit more more focused. They're kind of a little bit more, like, kind of thinking through the race and thinking what they need to do. And, you know, they're just more focused on the end prize. I think that this is kind of a good picture for us when we talk about our walk with God, our journey with Jesus Christ. This is kind of the picture that I want for you to have in your head as we kind of walk through these passages that we're going to go. We're going to go through various passages. But this whole idea, this whole picture of this long, long journey, okay, 26.2 miles, it's a long ways. And there's hills, there's ups and downs, there's going to be really tough times, really hard times, but you are just focused on the end prize, on the end goal. That's where you want to be. You want to end, and you want to look back and say, I finished strong, I finished well, I finished the race, okay? And this is kind of a similar picture of the passages that we're studying out, the kind of the main passages that we're looking at in 2 Timothy 4. And I'll start out by just reading this passage to you this morning. And as we kind of look at this passage and reflect on this kind of this idea of the race, specifically what I want to look at is this morning is how we can run through, keep on running through trials as we run this race, how we can keep on running through dry spells and fatigue, and then how we can keep on running through emotions. Those two things. Trials, dry spells, and emotions. Okay? And look at some of Paul's writings, and we'll look at one other Bible hero to see how he kind of ran through some of these things. So let's take a look at 2 Timothy 4, 6 through 8. He says this, "I am already being poured out like a drink offering, and the time has come for my departure. I have fought a good fight, and I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing." All right? So here's the background of this message, okay, of this passage. Paul is writing to Timothy, and he's kind of giving Timothy a charge, you know? Like, here's your instructions, Timothy. If you kind of back up just a little bit further, he tells Timothy, young Timothy, this guy is much younger than Paul. He says, Timothy, I want you to preach the word, be prepared in season and out season. Preach the gospel, whether it is popular or not popular, whether people are accepting it or not accepting it. He says, because the time is going to come, young Timothy, when people aren't going to put up with sound doctrine. They're not going to really care about what God has to say. And it's so prophetic. I kind of look around on our culture. I kind of see this today. Instead, to suit their own desires, they will gather around them a great number of teachers to say what their itching ears want to hear. So he's just telling Timothy, look, Timothy, there's going to be a time when people aren't going to listen to the gospel. They won't really care what God has to say. In fact, they'll gather teachers around them that they want, you know, to give a message that makes them feel good. You know, I want, you know, feed something to me that's going to make me feel good about what I'm doing, about myself, you know? But he says, you know, keep your head in all situations, endure hardships, and do the work of an evangelist. Discharge all your duties of your ministry. And then we get to the passage that we're focusing on. And see, here's the background, is that actually when Paul is writing this to Timothy, he is in, he is under house arrest, okay? He's in the city of Rome. He's come to the end of his, like, you know, we looked through Acts where Paul was taking this group of people around, sharing the gospel with all these different cities. And now he's been taken to Rome, and he's under house arrest. And that doesn't sound like, being under house arrest doesn't sound so bad. Like, hey, maybe the guy's just, you know, kind of at a bed and breakfast, kind of just, you know, just hanging out, just kind of, you know, writing letters and stuff. But actually, what he's in the Mamertine prison in Rome. And so what this looks like is, it's, you can go there today in Rome, and you can see this place, and it has, I've never been there, I wish I could go to Rome, but there's a place where you can actually go downstairs, you know, like these stone stairs, and those stairs were actually built afterwards, after Paul had stayed there many, many years later. But because originally what it was there was a it was just kind of concrete, and there was a hole a hole in the ground, maybe like a 2 feet across. And basically what they did is they would just lower the, or drop, maybe drop the prisoners in there. And then kind of like a sewer, kind of just close the latch, you know, and like there's kind of this grid up above so you could talk out through it and there'd be air and stuff like that. But really, they just kind of dropped Paul in there and they chained him up, and it was just cold and it was dark and it was, you know, maybe there was rats and stuff in there, but it was not a comfortable place. But he just stayed there, and he wrote many of his letters to Timothy and to these churches while he was there under house arrest, okay? And so he's writing this letter to his kind of his son in ministry. I mean, it's not his biological son, but it's his Timothy, this guy that he really cared for, that he took along with him on these trips. And he's charging him to preach God's word, to say, like, I want you, Timothy, to endure. You know, stick with it. Whether people listen to it or don't, your job is to be faithful, all right? Your job is to stay with it. And he starts out by saying, hey, Timothy, and then the passage that we're focusing on, he says, for I am already being poured out like a drink offering. And what's that mean? I mean, he says, and for the time of my departure is coming. Paul kind of already knew that something was happening, that he knew. He had a sense that he was coming to the end of his time here on earth. And history tells us that that when Roman citizens, and Paul was a Roman citizen, when they were executed, and history, tradition says that Paul was, how he ended his life was that Nero, possibly, the Caesar at the time, had Paul executed. But they said that when Roman citizens were executed, they'd take them outside the city. And what would happen is if they were beheaded, okay, when he talks about being poured out like a drink offering, he said when they were beheaded, that they would actually turn their bodies upside down so that the blood would actually rush out of their bodies. And so what Paul is telling Timothy here is he's saying that, you know what, Timothy, by the time you receive this letter, it is quite possible by the time that you have this in your hands and you're reading this, that I have already been poured out as a drink offering to God. Like, my life has already been given as a drink offering, as kind of like this sacrifice. You could also kind of think of that imagery of that blood on the altar. My life has already been poured out. As you are reading this, it is quite possible that I'm already gone. But Paul says the good news is that I'm at the end. I'm at the end, Timothy. And I have finished the race. And you know what? I didn't just start strong. You know, you've been with me, Timothy. We've done all these trips together, sharing the gospel, going to these different cities. We've experienced trouble together. And it's not only, Timothy, that I started strong. I'm at the end now. And I can look back and I said, I've finished it. I've been faithful. And I fought the good fight. So he's saying something more to Timothy. It's more than, he's like saying, there's something more than, you know, because I think sometimes as a young minister maybe, or as a young people, it's really kind of cool, I don't know, you know, maybe at retreats or something, or, I don't know, certain experiences that we have, we get really like amped up. You know, it's kind of like Christianity on Red Bull or Amp or Monster or whatever, where you're like totally psyched up, right? You know, I look at you, we almost experience this almost every year at the retreat. We're like, dang, I'm going to do it, man. I'm going to live for the Lord, you know? You know, our theme is Ignite, you know? And I'm hoping that, like, God, again, just kind of revives us, sparks us, you know, revives us. So that we're like, this year, I'm going to, as I go into school year, I'm going to, like, live for Him. I'm going to throw it all down, you know? And, you know, as young, and I'm still young, you know, I'm still in my 30s, it's like, as young folks, like, we're still like, we like that. We like that passion where we're like, like, I feel it. Like, I want to live for Him. I'm like, I'm totally stoked for Him. But Paul is telling Timothy, there is more than that. You know, what I'd really love to see, I'd like to see even beyond, you know, that passion. And that's great, Timothy. But even beyond that, beyond this kind of, this this, you know, amped Christianity is, I'd like to see this steady, long pace where you just keep on walking. Where even if you come down from that, like, when you come down from your caffeine high, you know, you just keep on going. You keep walking until the very end. And so, what can we do? What can we do to make sure that we keep walking? You know, that we can say what Paul is saying here at the end. You know, that we can say that we've kept the faith, that we've fought the good fight in the very end in our last days like Paul. Well, here's the deal. The first thing is that we keep on running through trials, okay? So if you have your Bibles open, you can stick your finger in Timothy or fold a crease the page. And then if you flip back to 2 Corinthians, okay? 2 Corinthians 11. 2 Corinthians 11, starting in verse 23. This whole idea of running through trials, okay? 2 Corinthians 11, starting in verse 23. We'll start like kind of halfway through 23. This is Paul talking to the Corinthians. He says, I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews 40 lashes minus one. They used to do lashes, you know, when they'd punish someone, they'd do 40 lashes, and they said, well, just subtract one just to make sure, because they'd say, like, usually over 40 lashes, the person's in danger of just losing too much blood and dying. So they just, like, 40 lashes, just in case you miscounted, just minus one, just do 39. So that's what he's referring to. 3 times I've been beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I've been constantly on the move. I've been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my own countrymen, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger in the sea, in danger from false brothers. I have labored and toiled and have gone out without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst. I have gone without food. I've been cold and naked. Beside everything else, I face daily pressure of my concern with all the churches. So you can't say, you know, you kind of look at this picture in Acts 9 where Paul meets the Lord. You know, he's on the road to Damascus. Just this light comes down and God totally reveals himself to Paul, and he's just thrown back, just amazed. You know, and I imagine throughout his ministry, he still has this picture in his head throughout the whole time of him just, whoa, like this bright light where I couldn't even look at it, and I was blinded for a while. And so you think that maybe that, and God tells them, you know, Jesus Christ tells them, like, hey, you will be the one to take the message to all the Gentiles. You know, so you think that maybe when Jesus told Paul that Jesus would make this kind of this smooth road for Paul, that things would go really nice and smooth, because, hey, you're the one I've chosen, Paul, so I'll just make this road really smooth for you so that whenever you go into any city, people will surround you. You share the gospel, people will respond to you, people will celebrate the gospel. But that's not the case. When you look at Paul's life, man, he has had some major, major problems. He has gone with a lot of people to a lot of different places, and he's been beaten many, many times and experienced a lot of trials. A lot of trials. Scholars say that over the years of ministry, Paul traveled about a little over 10,000 miles on foot, you know, going through all the cities over the many years that he went sharing the message. And I know that when you look at Paul's life, I know we've gone through Acts, and I know when you look at Paul's life, I'm the same way. You can't really, you're like, yeah, but I'm not getting beaten for sharing the gospel, you know. And I'm not, you know, like we read kind of the last part of Acts, you read about how he was shipwrecked and how they were gonna toss over, they were gonna murder, the guards were gonna kill all the people on the boat so that they wouldn't so the guards themselves wouldn't get killed for losing the prisoners, and then they shipwrecked, and then they land on an island, and Paul gets bit by a snake. And I know that, like, you guys aren't getting bitten by snakes, you're not getting beaten, you're not being cold, you're not out there naked. I know you're not like that. But I do know that there are trials in your lives, because I've heard some of them, you know. I know there's trials in your lives. I know that you guys are going through things that are tough. Sometimes it's a tough time with, you know, maybe it's a trial with, for some of you, it's a trial maybe with your parents, either one or both of them. For some of you, it's like a, maybe you've had this, you've experienced a falling out of with your friends, and not kind of like the elementary school falling out with your friends where you just get another friend, but more like a, you know, where you lose a friend, where someone betrays you or someone hurts you really bad. Or some of you, I've seen some of you go through a trial of doubting with your faith, you know, where you're like, I just don't know if God's there. I don't see God. Or I question if I'm a Christian. Or a loss of a loved one. Or depression. Or social anxiety. Or, you know, any number, loss of direction, where you're like, I have no idea where I'm going. I don't know where I'm going in life. Or breaking up with someone. I know that you guys experience trials, and some of them are less, and some of them are heavy, heavy, heavy trials, where it is like, where are you, God? I see no evidence of you anywhere. It's so heavy in my life right now. I can barely stand it. And I know some of you are like, hey, I mean, some of you are, you know, I mean, gosh, up to the point where, you know, maybe my sophomore year in high school, up to that point, maybe some of you, the worst trial is for you is that you got a D on a quiz or something, you know, and it's like, I just, I can't relate to trials. I haven't had anything heavy in my life yet, you know, I just haven't experienced it. But you will. You know, you will eventually. If you haven't had one yet, you will. Because trials are just a part of life. But the cool thing is that Paul kept running through these trials. He ran through these trials. Okay? Like, he kept walking. He kept sharing the gospel. He kept moving through these trials. And what you need to do when going through a trial, instead of abandoning the Lord, instead of getting swallowed up in your trial, and maybe like kind of going inward, what you need to do is take Him with you. It's to take Him with you in the trial. You know, like whatever it is, how heavy it is or however light it is, what you do is, in order to keep walking, in order to run the race, is you're like, God, I'm struggling right now, but I'm going to take You with me. I need You right here with me, and I'm going to talk to You. I'm going to pray to You. I'm going to call out to You through the duration of this trial, no matter how long it lasts. I'm taking You with me. I'm not going to look for anything else to relieve this pain. I'm not going to like run away from it. I'm going to take You with me. And that's how you run through a trial. You call out to Him. I mean, this whole praise night that we're doing, you know, in 2 weeks, like, the theme is heard. The whole idea is like calling out to God and being heard by Him, you know? That, like, man, there are times in my life where you just look back and you're like, I was desperate. I was desperate and I called out to God. And that's how you walk, that you journey through a trial with Him. You take Him with you. In the book of James, it says that the trials develop perseverance. You know, so in some ways you can say, like, hey, even if I am going through a trial right now, I know that God's purposing something for me. He's developing perseverance. And perseverance, it says, must finish its work so that you can mature. Last night at OCCYG, Joe was talking about growing, you know, growing. And you guys remember, for those of you there, he was saying, like, look, you know, there's part of us that wants to, like, I want to grow. You know, he's like, I'd like for my hair to grow, but I can't grow it out. You know, or some of us, he's like, I'd like to get taller, I grow taller, but I just can't grow myself. You know, it's like some things grow naturally. Some things we just can't grow it on our own. And trials is one of those ways. That's why James says, hey, be thankful. Be thankful for trials. You know, it's really hard in the midst of it, but be thankful in trials, because have joy in the midst of it, because you know God's persevering you, and perseverance is used to mature you up, to grow you. So at least you can have like some small prize, some small ending that you know that in the midst of a trial, God's purposing something for you. All right? So run the race by running through trials with God. With God. All right, a second occasion that we need to keep on running. We need to run through dry spells, through fatigue, through dry spells. I don't know. Maybe some of you are experiencing this now. I kind of looked through Scripture. Maybe some of you can help me with this afterwards. I don't know. I couldn't think of a time where Paul had a dry spell in his, in his walk. I'm sure he must have. I mean, the guy was, was just a guy, just a human being. But I couldn't think of some time when he was like, I don't know, Lord, just kind of dry, just fatigued in my walk, and just, maybe it's because it's just not written down. Paul shares a lot in his letters of what's going on in his heart, but he doesn't like journal per se, But I can think of another Bible hero who at least alludes to this kind of dryness, or at least he writes about it. If you guys turn way back to Psalms, Psalm 22, Psalm 22, 1 and 2. It's David, David, God calls him a man after my own heart. And, looked as, at least, in the Bible, as one of these just great, great godly men, even though we perfectly aware of his faults. But in Psalm 22, and I love the Psalms because, again, they're just like, it's like peeking into someone's journal, It's like looking in to see what someone's thinking. And Psalm 22, David says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? So far from the words of my groaning. Oh my God, I cry out day by day. I cry out by day, but you do not answer. By night, and am not silent. And so, it's like a picture of David, why don't I feel you, God? Why don't I experience you anymore? Where are you in the midst of all this? And this psalm particularly is not dated. At least I haven't found anything where it says like, well, this is what David was experiencing during this time when he wrote this psalm. I'd be fascinated to know. There's a lot of psalms where like what's going on, but this psalm you don't know what's going on. And of course this is somewhat prophetic to what Jesus. I mean, the words almost can be taken for what Jesus says on the cross, many years later. My God, why have you forsaken me? So even Christ, I wouldn't describe it as a dry spell. I mean, that was when he was experiencing the Father's wrath and the Father's removing his presence. But David is, just, God, like, I call out to you during the day and at nighttime, and I don't, you're silent, And so, a few years back when Mother Teresa passed away, Mother Teresa, again, I mean, I guess you can see, like, she's like a modern-day Bible hero. I mean, she's not a Bible hero, but a modern-day hero, where you think of Mother Teresa as being, like, this woman who served in India. I know probably never studied Mother Teresa, but maybe you've heard her name before. And, she was this godly woman who just gave her life to serving the poor in India, and you'd think that, just years and years of serving, and in Time Magazine or Newsweek or something, I was reading, after she passed away, some of her writings came out, some of her journals came out, and some of her writings were like, she hadn't heard from God, she'd been praying to God for many months and months and months. I mean, maybe even a year or so. And just never heard from God. Never heard an answer from Him. Never experienced something refreshing from Him. And so I'm like thinking, gosh, even Mother Teresa has this kind of time where she doesn't see Him. You know, she doesn't see God. Like, where are you? You know? And so dryness expresses itself in different ways. I think for David, for Mother Teresa, sometimes it's like, I just haven't heard from you. We look in the Bible and we follow along with the Israelites. You guys follow just through the whole Testament. You just follow this group of people, the Israelites, and you see another kind of dryness, not where they're not hearing from God, but it's more of this, the people are just being wayward, you know? They're just, you know, when they're out in the desert, after Moses took them out, led them out in the desert, I mean, it's kind of ironic, they're in this dry desert, but they're also in this really dry time with their relationship with God. They're not really paying attention. They're really not being obedient. They're really not doing what God says. They're really not listening to God. And so they're really experiencing this dryness, like this, we don't care. We're apathetic. We're complaining. We just want anything but you, God. Right? And then throughout Israel's history as well, you see God's response to this dryness. And a lot of times he disciplines them. You know, he'd go through and then they'd kind of be apathetic or complacent with God, disobedient. And then God would discipline them, allow another country to conquer them and feel this like pain that they have, discipline. And then they'd come back to God. And you see this happening again and again and again and again throughout Israel's history. And I think sometimes this is how dryness expresses itself in our lives, right? Similar to, I look and I read Israel's history and I like, man, this is awesome sometimes. This is me sometimes, you know? It's like it expresses ourselves with boredom or apathy or complacency or complaining. And that's how it comes out. And so when you kind of get back to this whole idea of, I just watched this morning. I was here early this morning. I was watching a video. I was thinking about this as far as a marathon and half marathon in my case. And there's this guy that he's just talking about. It's kind of like running a race without water. You know, running a marathon without water. And again, you know, when you run a marathon, you know, I don't know how many every miles that they have. You know, you run by and they hold out cups for you, little cups of Gatorade or drink, water, whatever, and you run by and you drink something along the way so that you can stay hydrated. And kind of if we're not meeting with God, you know, if we're not getting in His Word and actually drinking of His Word, then it's kind of like that. It's like running a race and you're just thirsty and your body starts to kind of shut down. You know, because you're losing a lot. You're sweating. You're losing a lot of minerals, salt, all this other stuff. You know, and that's what it's like. And so sometimes we just, you know, we need to stop and start drinking again. And so how do you run through dry spells where you don't hear or experience God, or where you're just bored? You know, how do you get through that? You know, because it's tough. Like, if I'm apathetic and I feel just kind of complacent, like, how do I ever get back to feeling like I want to meet with God again? You know. And what Paul says is that sometimes we just need to do what we don't feel like doing, and that's like just keep on running the race. Keep on running. Okay, you don't have to turn there. I'll just turn there. It's 1 Corinthians. If you want to, you can. 1 Corinthians 9. 1 Corinthians 9 says, 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27 says this. It says, he's talking about a race again. Paul says, do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize. Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last. He's talking about those who just are just competing just to get a prize, you know, just to get like the trophy and all that stuff. But for us, we do it to get the crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like a man running aimlessly. I do not fight like a man beating the air. Here's the key. No, I beat my body to make it my slave so that after I've preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. So Paul is like talking to the Corinthians. Corinthians are having problems, right? They're not really walking with God. They're acting a lot like the world around them. And Paul is giving them advice, but one of the things he says is that, you know, what I do is that even though there's a part of me that really does not want to meet with God, there's a really large part of me that does not want to obey God, I understand you. Those of you Corinthians, I understand you. I get you. There's a large part of me that doesn't want to do what God wants me to do. But he says, I beat my body so that I make it do what it needs to do. And it doesn't mean, again, I don't want you. Of course, it doesn't mean that he's like, you know, he's like whacking himself, that he's beating his body, you know, that he's like cutting himself or just, you know, beating his body. But what he's saying is, I make myself do, because I have freedom in Christ, because the Spirit of God lives in me, I make myself do what I don't want to do. Even though there's two sides, there's two natures operating in me. There's the Spirit of God that He's given to me. There's also the sin nature that God's working through to change in me. There's two things that are going on. He's like, I just go ahead and I do what I know that I'm supposed to do. Okay? Ideally, you know, we've talked about in the past three sermons that I've talked about. Ideally, what we would like to see, you know, is that like the woman who anointed Jesus' feet, you know, and she was just so like, whoa, God, I'm amazed at how you forgave me. And so for her, it was not a problem. She didn't have to kind of make herself do it. Or like the leper who returned in thankfulness, that's like the ideal, right? Where you're just like, oh, God, I'm just so thankful. I saw who I once was, and now I know who I am now and what you've done for me. That's like ideal. That's what we'd like to see. Or like Isaiah, who was brought, you know, God brought him into his presence and was just so floored by comparing himself with God that he just felt like, Lord, I just, in comparison to you, I'm nothing. That's the ideal. But I know the reality, right? I'm familiar with the practicality of it all. And I know that's not always the case. I know, like, Joe Chalufa last night, he was talking about being in the presence of God, you know? And one of the questions that he had our care groups ask is like, hey, do you more identify with Moses, who was like, you know, constantly in the presence of God? Or do you more identify with the Israelites, who were just kind of like, make us an idol, make us something where we can, because we haven't seen Moses for a while, we haven't seen God for a while, so you know, do something, because we're bored and we're looking for something to do, you know? And, you know, and I know, like, and in your groups, you probably, like, at least our group, there are some that, like, well, you know, identify with kind of some Moses and some Israelites, and there's something like, they're honest, like, hey, I identify with the Israelites, straight out. You know, that's who I identify with right now. I'm just not in the presence of God right now. I'm not meeting with them right now. But I bet you, though, if I probe more deeply, if I asked you guys about this more, you would probably say, most of you would probably say, I want to get with God. You know, I wish I had the desire to be with God, but I just don't right now. I just don't feel it right now. I'm not inspired right now. And Paul says, okay, just go ahead and do it. Just go ahead and do it. Even though you don't feel like doing it, just go ahead and just go ahead and meet with God. And eventually, what will happen is, as you run through this, you know, that it's kind of like as you're running a race and you drink water, you'll feel better and better, and you'll want him more and more. That's how you kind of run through like this boredom or apathy or complacency or dryness in your walk. Just start someplace and start drinking just a little bit of water, you know, and it'll go from there. Okay? And this kind of ties into the last occasion where we need to keep on running. Okay? And that is, we need to keep on running through our varying emotions. Varying emotions. Emotions are really powerful. Even for Asian people like us, you know? We don't really express our emotions, you know? But emotions are extremely, extremely powerful. I mean, there are times you can recall when you're feeling, you're just like flying high. You are just like inspired. You're feeling good. You're feeling rested. And you're like, I can conquer the world right now. Like, I'm ready to start a Bible study. I'm going to read through the whole, you know, we all start in Genesis, right? You always go, I'm going to read the whole Bible this year. And you open up in the beginning of January, you go through Genesis. I'm like, I'm ready to go, baby. You know, and then you get to Numbers, and you start slowing down a little bit, and you're just, oh, just forget this, man. I'm too tired, you know. I've got stuff to do, right? And so there's times when our emotions are like, I am just stoked. I'm ready to go. But then when you're down, like there's times when you're just really down, and you don't feel like meeting a God at all, and you're completely uninspired, you know? And just, I mean, emotions, if you think about it, like really steer much of our lives, you know? They do. I was, a few months ago, I was mowing the lawn, and this was right before Sarah and I were getting ready to go, our family were getting ready to go to New York, and I'm mowing the lawn, and I'm mowing our front yard, and I'm mowing, and I go past, and then I see something moving, and it was after I'd mowed over it, and maybe I told you the story, but like, I ran over a little bunny, and it was like, I mean, this bunny was like, I mean, I'm not kidding, it was like, I could have held it in my palm, you know, it was just this little guy, and I stopped the lawnmower, I turned it off, and then I saw him like just, he was like really hurt, like he was just flopping, like on our sidewalk basically, just in pain, like writhing in pain, and I bent down and I saw that like his nose had blood coming from it, and you guys, I mean, I just felt like, I felt awful, like, I mean, I was just like, I wanted to pick him up, and I was just like, ah, you know, and I'm a dude and stuff, but I felt like I just wanted to start blubbering right there. I'm like, oh, you know, and I just, and eventually, and it was just, you guys, it was just an awful day, you know, because I picked him up, eventually, like, he stopped, and I picked him up, and he's just, like, laying there limp in my hand, and I could see him breathing really fast, you know, and I'm like, gosh, I'm thinking, should I run him to the hospital or the vet or something, you know, should I take him to the vet, you know, like, he's dying, you know, and it wasn't too much longer after that, you know, that he died, and so I put him down, and I'm like, oh, and then it got worse, like, I mowed the lawn some more, and I ran over another one. I mean, it was awful, like, because I didn't see him, you know, and I didn't think there'd be two, you know, and I ran over him, and the other one, the other one wasn't bleeding at all. It wasn't like, it looked like it was just, like, I thought, is he just playing dead? Because, like, I didn't, like, there's no, he wasn't cut up, and he was just, you know, just laying there, and I'm like, and there were some guys working on the road, you know, like, doing construction, and the guy yells out to me, like, you run over a bunny nest? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, don't touch it, the mom won't come back, you know? So I left him there, and I'm like, and then I mowed, like, there's this patch of ground, I mowed her, like, around, you know, just kind of around him, but I kept coming back, and I'm like, and I don't know if he died because he was just like, his brother died, or if he was just, you know, just because, like, he, you know, he was just so scared or whatever, but, oh, I felt awful, and I picked them up, and then I had these, like, these deer leather gloves, these really soft leather gloves, and I just, it was like their little grave. I just kind of slipped them into these gloves, you know, and then put them in the trash. And I went in afterwards. Says, I know I should have buried them, but I felt like that was kind of like their grave, you know, like a little soft, you know. And I came to Sarah afterwards, and I just was holding them like, I just killed two bunnies, you know. And Sarah's like, oh, you know, just holding me. And I'm like, oh. But I mean, I just for a long time, and that was right before we left for New York, and I was driving, and I'm just like, oh, I want you to come, because I just want death to end, you know, I just want sin and death just to be over, because those bunnies wouldn't have died, they had, you know, but I mean, just, emotions can really steer, like, our day, and the way that we go about our day, our walk, you know, they can, like, totally, like, just the way we interact with people, the way we, like, if we're tired or sad, sometimes we feel uninspired. We just don't connect with God. We stop connecting with Him. We allow our emotion to just kind of like, just. And so, I want to point out just one last passage of Paul, because Paul experienced the same thing. 2 Corinthians 12. Second Corinthians 12, 7 to 10. Says, okay, this is Paul. To keep me from becoming conceited, because of these surpassingly great revelations, there was given to me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses and insults and hardships and persecutions and difficulties. For when I'm weak, then I am strong. And so Paul, it never talks about what that thorn was that was in his side. It doesn't explain exactly what it was. But my point is that Paul also experienced a lot of trouble. I mean, this kind of ties in with the trials, but it also ties in with, I'm sure that Paul at times felt just discouraged, just like, I don't want to go on anymore. I don't want to not like end my life, but I just want to end this God thing. I'm tired, and I don't want to keep going. And we look back, and what we see is like Paul, through the various trials, and I'm sure there was times when he was as high as a kite, and I'm sure there was times when he was like, I just finish me now, like, Lord, if it would be nice if you just took my life today, because I am beaten down, and I just want to go home. I just want to encourage you to like think about your emotions, because there's times when you're like, hey, I just don't, you know, I don't feel like getting up today and going to worship you, God. It's Sunday morning. I was up till 3 a.m. last night, and I don't feel like getting up. And there'll be times, you know, particularly I feel like, you know, especially those you in high school when you moved to college and you're just like, you know, either you're having a great time, super great time, you're out till 4 a.m. or up till 4 a.m, or you're having an awful time and you just feel depressed because you're just feeling isolated or whatever. And you're like, I don't feel like going to church. I don't feel like getting in the community. I don't feel like singing songs to you. I don't feel like worshiping. It's your emotion, right? It's your emotion. You don't feel like it. But walk through it. You know, Paul says like, hey, look, he's gone through those times when he's like, where he's like, I was weak and I've suffered this stuff. But in the end, at the very end, when Paul when Paul looks back, you know, he can say, like, hey, I, Timothy, through all of it, when I look back through everything, like, I have fought the good fight. You know, I've remained faithful. And so I want the same for you. I want it to be that someday when we're all sitting in the nursing home and we're just old as can be and we're in, like, wheelchairs and our teeth are falling out, you know, and we're just old, that you can look back and you can say, look, I may have stumbled. I may have wavered sometimes. But when I look back, you know, I fought the good fight. You know, I ran the race. I didn't give up. You know, I didn't, like, go off on my own. And I remained faithful to the very end. You know, that's what you want. That's what I want for you. Okay? You know, why don't we close in prayer, and then we can respond with song. Heavenly Father,